shrub pointed to the horizon. There was a white shape on it. That? Said Maskelyne.
That's it,
said Angelo.
Yes.
Doesn't look very big, said Gerda quietly. It's still quite a long way off, said Maskelyne.
I can see helicopters, said Angelo. No wonder Shrub didn't want to take the geese any closer.
We must be going, said Maskelyne. We've got an hour, and I reckon that's barely enough. We'd better say goodbye to Shrub. Can you explain thing? Tell her that we'll try and find her again afterwards, if everything's all right, I suppose. Shrub nodded when the thing had finished translating, and then pushed Peon forward. The thing told Maskelyne what she wanted.
What? We can't take him with us. Young gnomes in Shrub's people are encouraged to travel, said the thing. Peon is only 14 months old, and already he has been to Alaska.
Try and make her understand that all sorts of things could happen to him.
She says that is good. A growing boy should always seek out new experiences.
What?
Are you translating me properly?
Said Maskelyne suspiciously.
Yes.
Well, have you told her it's dangerous?
Yes, she says that danger is what being alive is all about.
But he could be killed, Maskelyne shrieked.
Then he will go up into the sky and become a star.
Is that what they believe?
Yes. They believe that the operating system of a gnome starts off as a goose. If it is a good goose, it becomes a gnome. When a good gnome dies, NASA takes it up into the sky and it becomes a star.
What's an operating system? Said Maskelyne.
The thing inside you that tells you what you are.
It means a soul, said Gerda wearily.
Let the lad come if he likes, Angelo said. He shows the right spirit.
He reminds me of me when I was like him.
His mother says that if he gets homesick, he can always find a goose to bring him back, said the thing.
Maskelyne opened his mouth to speak, but there were times when he couldn't say anything because there was nothing to say. Oh, all right, he said, but we have to go right away. No time for long tearful. Peon nodded to his mother and came and stood by Maskelyne, who couldn't think of anything to say.
Even later on, when he understood the geese gnomes better, he never quite got used to the way they cheerfully parted from one another.
Distances didn't seem to mean much to them.
They jogged through scrub two or three times as high as they were.
Do they have smoked salmon on shuttles? Said Gerda.
No, they don't, said Angelo. I remember reading about it in a book.
They eat out of tubes.
What? Toothpaste? Said Gerda after a while.
No, not toothpaste. Of course not toothpaste. Well, what else do you know that comes in tubes?
Angelo thought about this. Glue?
Doesn't sound a good meal to me. Toothpaste and glue? The people who drive the space jets must like it. They were all smiling in the picture I saw, said Angelo.
Probably just trying to get their teeth apart, said Gerda.
They have to have their food in tubes because of gravity.
What about gravity?
There isn't any.
Any what?
Gravity, so everything floats around.
What? In water? Said Gerda.
No, in air, because there's nothing to hold it on the plate, you see.
Oh, Gerda nodded.
Is that where the glue comes in?
Maskelyne knew that they could go on like this for hours.
How long, thing?
40 minutes.
We've got to have another rest. Gerda isn't running, he's just falling upright.
They collapsed in the shade of a bush. The shuttle didn't look much closer, but they could see plenty of other activity. There were more helicopters. According to frantic signs from Peon, who climbed up the bush, there were humans much further off.
I need to sleep, said Angelo.
Didn't you sleep on the goose? Said Maskelyne.
Did you?
Angelo stretched out in the shade. Maskelyne glanced at Gerda. The abbot was asleep already. Peon curled up and started to snore. Angelo yawned. They hadn't slept for hours. Gnomes slept mainly at night, but needed catnaps to get through the long day. Even Maskelyne was nodding.
Thing, wake me up in 10 minutes, will you?
It wasn't the thing that woke Maskelyne up. It was Gerda, talking to the thing in a low voice.
"I believed in the store," he said. "And then it was just a sort of thing built by humans. And I thought grandson Richard was some special person. And he turned out to be a human who sings when he wets himself.
Takes a shower.
And now there's thousands of gnomes in the world. Thousands, believing all sorts of things. That stupid topknot person believes that the going-up shuttles make the sky. Do you know what I thought when I heard that? I thought if he'd been the one arriving in my world instead of the other way around, he'd have thought I was just as stupid. I am just as stupid. Thing?
I was maintaining a tactful silence.
I knew where I was back in the store, said Gerda. And even in the quarry it wasn't too bad. I had a proper job. I was important to people. How can I go back now, knowing that everything I believed about the store and Arnold Brothers and grandson Richard is just an opinion?
I cannot advise. I am sorry.
Masklin decided it was a diplomatic time to wake up. He made a grunting noise just to be sure that Gerda heard him. The abbot was very red in the face.
I couldn't sleep, he said shortly.
Masklin stood up. How long, thing?
27 minutes.
Ah! Why didn't you wake me up?
I wished you to be refreshed.
But it's still a long way off. We'll never get you onto it in time. Wake up, you!
Masklin prodded Angelo with his foot.
Come on, we'll have to run. Where's Peon? Oh, there you are. Come on, Gerda!
They jogged on through the scrub. In the distance, there was the low, mournful howl of sirens. Now they were closer, Masklin could see the shuttle. It was quite high up. I hope you've got a good plan, thing, he panted as the four of them dodged between the bushes, because I'll never be able to get you all the way up there.
Do not worry. We are nearly close enough.
What do you mean? It's still a long way off.
It is close enough for me to get on.
What's it going to do? Take a flying leap, said Angelo.
Put me down.
Masklin obediently put the black box on the ground. It extended a few of its probes, which swung around slowly for a while, and then pointed towards the going-up jet.
What are you playing at? Said Masklin. This is wasting time.
I am transmitting an instruction subset to the computer on the communications satellite, said the thing.
The gnomes said nothing.
Or to put it another way, I am turning the satellite computer into a part of me.
Can you really do that? Said Angelo.
Certainly.
Wow. And you won't miss the bit you're sending?
No, because it will not leave me.
You're sending it and keeping it at the same time?
Yes.
Angelo looked at Masklin. Did you understand any of that? He demanded.
I did, said Gerda. The thing's saying it's not just a machine, it's a sort of collection of electric thoughts that live in a machine. I think.
Lights flickered around on top of the thing. Does it take a long time to do? Said Masklin.
Yes. Please do not take up vital communication power at this point.
I think he means he doesn't want us to talk to him, said Gerda. He's concentrating.
Peon pulled at Masklin's arm, pointed to the looming white shape with his other hand, and rattled off a long sentence in Floridian, or, if the thing was right, nearly original gnomish.
I can't understand you without the thing, said Masklin. Sorry. No speaker da guso, said Angelo.
A look of panic spread across the boy's face. He shouted this time and tugged harder.
I think he doesn't want to be near the going-up jets when they start up, said Angelo. He's probably afraid of the noise.
Don't like the noise, right? He said.
Peon nodded furiously.
Oh, come on, said Angelo. The thing wouldn't have let us come right here if it wasn't safe for gnomes.
Peon turned and ran. The other three looked back at the shuttle. Lights moved in complicated patterns on the top of the thing. Somewhere, another siren sounded. When Masklin spoke, the other two seemed to hear him speak their own thoughts. Exactly how good do you think the thing is at judging how close gnomes can stand to a going-up jet when it goes up? I mean, how much experience has it got, do you think? They looked at one another.
Maybe we should back off,
a little bit, Gerda began. They turned and walked away. Then each of them couldn't help noticing that the others seemed to be walking faster and faster, and faster and faster. Then, as one gnome, they gave up and ran for it, fighting their way through the scrub and grass, skidding on stones, elbows going up and down like pistons. Gerda, who was normally out of breath at anything above walking pace, bounded along like a balloon. The sound behind them started like a hiss, like the whole world taking a deep breath. Then it turned into, not noise, but something more like an invisible hammer which smacked into both ears at once. After some time, when the ground had stopped shaking, the gnomes picked themselves up and stared blearily at one another. Masklin saw Gerda's lips move. He pointed to his own ears and shook his head. "We've gone deaf."
"Huh?"
Smoke billowed overhead. And out of it, rising fast even to a gnome's high-speed senses, was a long, growing cloud tipped with fire. The noise dropped to something merely very loud, and then very quickly disappeared. Masklin stuck a finger in his ear and wiggled it around. The absence of sound was replaced by the terrible hiss of silence. "Anyone listening?" he ventured. "Anyone hear me?" "That," said Angelo, "was pretty loud. I don't reckon many things come much louder." Masklin nodded. He felt as though he'd been pounded hard by something. "You know about these things, Angelo," he said weakly. "Humans ride on them, do they?"
"Oh, yes, right at the top."
"No one makes them do it?"
I don't think so," said Angelo. "I think the book said a lot of them want to do it."
There was only a distant dot now at the end of a widening white cloud of smoke. Masklin watched it. "We must be mad," he thought. "We're tiny, and it's a big world, and we never stop to learn enough about where we are before we go somewhere else. At least back when I lived in a hole, I knew everything there was to know about living in a hole, and now it's a year later, and I'm at a place so far away, I don't even know how far away it is. Watching something I don't understand go to a place so far up, there's no down, and I can't go back. I've got to go right on to the end of whatever all this is, because I can't go back. I can't even stop." "So that's what Grimmer meant about the frogs. Once you know things, you're a different person. You can't help it." He looked back down. Something was missing. The thing. He ran back the way they'd come. The little black box was where he'd left it. The rods had withdrawn into it, and there weren't any lights. "Thing?" One red light came on faintly. "Are you all right?" The light flickered.
"Too quick. Used too much pow."
"Pow?" said Masklin. The light dimmed. "Thing?"
"Thing?"
He tapped gently on the box. "Did it work? Is the ship coming? What do we do now? Wake up, thing!" The light went out. Masklin picked the thing up and turned it over and over in his hands. "Thing!" Masklin and Gerda hurried up with Peon behind them. Masklin turned his face towards them. "The thing stopped," he said.
"Stopped?
All the lights have gone out."
"Is it dead?" said Gerda.
"It can't die. It's existed for thousands of years." Gerda shook his head.
"Sounds like a good reason for dying," he said.
Angelo sat down with his arms around his knees.
"Did it say if it got everything sorted out? When's the ship coming?"
"Listen, don't you care. It's run out of pow."
"Pow? It must mean electricity. It kind of sucks it out of wires and stuff, and now it must have run out." "Can't we find it some electricity?" said Gerda.
"Around here there isn't any," Angelo snapped.
"We're in the middle of nowhere."
Masklin stood up and gazed around. It was just possible to see some buildings in the distance. There was a movement of vehicles around them.
"What about the ship?" said Angelo. "Is it on its way? I don't know. How will it find us? I don't know."
Angelo squinted up at the blue sky.
"Oh, wow,"
he said glumly.
"We need to find some electricity for the thing," said Masklin. "Even if it's managed to summon the ship will still need to be told where we are."
"If it summoned the ship," said Gerda, "it might have run out of power before it had time." We can't be sure, said Masklin. Anyway, we must help the thing. I hate to see it like that. Peon, who had disappeared into the scrub, came back dragging a lizard. Ah, said Gerda without any enthusiasm. Here comes lunch. If the thing was talking, we could tell Peon you'd get awfully tired of lizard in time, said Angelo. In about 2 seconds, said Gerda. Come on, said Masklin wearily. Let's go and find some shade and think up another plan. Oh, a plan, Gerda said, as if that was worse than lizard. I like plans. They ate, not very well, and lay back watching the sky. The brief sleep on the way hadn't been enough. It was easy to doze. I must say these Floridians have got it all worked out, said Gerda lazily. It's cold back home, and here they've got the heating turned up just right. I keep telling you, it's not the heating, said Angelo, straining his eyes for any sign of a descending ship. And the wind isn't the air conditioning either. It's the sun that makes you warm. Tell him, Masklin. They both looked at Masklin, at least where Masklin had been sitting. He'd gone. Beyond the top of the sky was the place the thing had called the universe. It contained, according to the thing, everything and nothing. And there was very little everything and more nothing than anyone could imagine. For example, it was often said that the sky was full of stars. It was untrue. The sky was full of sky. There were unlimited amounts of sky and really, by comparison, very few stars. They looked down as something round and shiny drifted around the earth. It had Arnsat 1 painted on its side, which was a bit of a waste of paint, since stars can't read. It unfolded a silver dish. It should then have turned to face the planet below it, ready to beam down old movies and new news. It didn't. It had new orders. Little puffs of gas jetted out as it turned around and searched the sky for a new target. By the time it had found it, a lot of people in the old movies and new news business were shouting very angrily at one another down telephones, and some of them were feverishly trying to give it new instructions. But that didn't matter, because it wasn't listening anymore. Masklin galloped through the scrub. They'd argue and bicker, he thought. I've got to do this quickly. I don't think we've got a lot of time. At least he knew where to find electricity. You found it near buildings with humans in them. The scrub ahead of Masklin opened out onto a track. He turned onto it and ran faster. Go along any track and you'd find humans on it somewhere. There were footsteps behind him. He turned around and saw Peon. The young Floridian gave him a worried smile. Go away, Masklin said. Go back. Why are you following me? Go away. Peon looked hurt. He pointed up the track and said something. I don't understand, shouted Masklin. Peon stuck a hand high above his head, palm downward. Humans? Masklin guessed. Yes, I know. I know what I'm doing. Go back. Go back to the others. He turned and ran. How much time have I got, he wondered. He saw figures looming over the scrub. What I'm going to do now, he thought, is probably the most stupid thing any gnome has ever done anywhere in the total history of gnome kind. He stepped out into a circle of gravel. A small truck was parked in it, with the name of the Floridian god Nasser painted on the side. Close by, a couple of humans were bent over a piece of machinery on a tripod. They didn't notice Masklin. He walked closer, his heart thumping. He put down the thing. He cupped his hands around his mouth. He tried to shout as clearly and as slowly as possible.
Hey there! You! Humans!
He did what? Shouted Angelo. Peon ran through his pantomime of gestures again.
Talked to humans? Said Angelo. Went in a thing with wheels?
I thought I heard a truck engine, said Gerda.
He was worried about the thing. He wanted to find it some electricity. But we must be miles from any buildings, said Gerda. Not the way Masklin's going.
What are we going to do? Gerda moaned.
Masklin thought, up to now, it's not too bad. The humans hadn't really known what to do about him. They'd even backed away. And then one of them had rushed to the truck and talked into a machine on a string. When he hadn't moved, one of the humans had fetched a box out of the back of the truck and crept towards him as if expecting Maslin to explode. In fact, when he waved, the human jumped back clumsily. The box was cautiously put down on the gravel a few feet from Masklin. Then both humans watched him expectantly. He kept smiling to put them at their ease and climbed into the box. Then he gave them another wave. One of the humans reached down gingerly and picked up the box. Masklin was carried to the truck. The human got in and placed the box on its knees. A radio crackled with deep human voices. Well, no going back now. Knowing that, Masklin very nearly relaxed. The truck lurched off. After a while, it turned onto a concrete road where another truck was waiting. A human got out, spoke to the driver of Masklin's truck, laughed in a slow human way, looked down at Masklin, and stopped laughing. It ran back to its own truck and started speaking into another telephone. I knew this would happen, Masklin thought. They don't know what to do with a real gnome. Amazing. But just so long as they take me somewhere where there's the right kind of electricity. Keep smiling. The truck purred along the road, with the other truck following it. Masklin saw a third truck rattle down a side road and pull in behind them. There were a lot of humans on it, and most of them were watching the skies. They didn't stop at the nearest building, but drove onto a bigger one with many more vehicles outside. More humans were waiting for them. One of them opened the truck door, doing it very slowly, even for a human. The human carrying Masklin got out of the truck. Masklin looked up at dozens of staring faces. He could see every eyeball, every nostril. Every one of them looked worried. At least every eyeball did. The nostrils just looked like nostrils. They were worried about him. Keep smiling. He stared back up at them and said,
"Can I help you, gentlemen?"
Gerda, Angelo and Peon sat under a bush. It gave them a bit of shade. The cloud of gloom over them was almost as big. "We'll never even get home without the things," said Gerda.
"Then we'll get Masklin out," said Angelo.
"That'll take forever."
"Yeah? Well, that's nearly as long as we've got here if we can't get home." Angelo had found a pebble that was almost the right shape to attach to a twig with strips torn off his coat. He'd never seen a stone axe in his life, but he had a definite feeling that there were useful things that could be done with a stone tied to the end of a stick. A small red light started to flash on the thing. After a while, a small square hole opened up, and there was a tiny whirring sound as the thing extended a little lens on a stick. This turned around slowly. Then the thing spoke.
"Where is this place?"
It tilted the lens up, and there was a pause while it surveyed the face of the human looking down at it.
"And why?"
"I'm not sure," said Masklin. "We're in a room, in a big building. The humans haven't hurt me. I think one of them has been trying to talk to me."
"We appear to be in some sort of glass box."
"They even gave me a little bed," said Masklin. "And I think the thing over there is some kind of lavatory. But look, what about the ship?"
"I expect it is on its way," said the thing calmly.
"Expect? You mean you don't know?"
"Many things can go wrong. If they have gone right, the ship will be here soon."
"If they don't, I'm stuck here for life," said Masklin bitterly. "I came here because of you, you know."
"Yes, I know. Thank you."
Masklin relaxed a bit. "They're being quite kind. At least I think so. It's hard to tell." He looked through the transparent wall. A lot of humans had been in to look at him in the last few minutes. He wasn't quite certain whether he was an honoured visitor or a prisoner, or maybe something in between. "It seemed the only hope at the time," he said lamely.
"I am monitoring communications."
"You're always doing that."
"A lot of them are about you. All kinds of experts are rushing here to have a look at you."
"What kind of experts? Experts in gnomes?"
"Experts in talking to creatures from other worlds. Humans haven't met anyone from another world, but they've still got experts in talking to them."
"All this had better work," said Masklin soberly. "Humans really know about gnomes now."
but not what gnomes are. They think you have just arrived. Well, that's true. Not arrived here, arrived on the planet, arrived from the stars.
But we've been here for thousands of years. We live here.
Humans find it a lot easier to really believe in little people from the sky than little people from the earth. They would prefer to think of little green space creatures than leprechauns.
Masklin's brow wrinkled. I didn't understand any of that, he said.
Don't worry about it. It doesn't matter.
The thing let its lens swivel around to see more of the room. Then it focused on a wide plastic tray by Masklin.
What is that?
Oh, fruit and nuts and meat and stuff. I think they've been watching me to see what I eat.
Ah, said the thing. Take me to your larder.
Pardon?
I will explain. Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
What? What?
I can hear the ship.
The remaining tree frogs crouched among the moss to escape the heat of the afternoon sun. Low in the eastern sky was a sliver of white. It would be nice to think that they thought the sun and moon were distant flowers, a yellow one by day, a white one by night. It would be nice to think that they had legends about them and said that when a good frog died, its soul would go to be big flowers in the sky. The trouble is that it's frogs we're talking about here. Their name for the sun was
Mip Mip.
Their name for the moon was
Mip Mip.
Their name for everything was
Mip Mip.
And when you're stuck with a vocabulary of one word, it's pretty hard to have legends about anything at all. The leading frog, however, was dimly aware that there was something wrong with the moon. It was growing brighter.
We left the ship on the moon, said Masklin. Why?
That's what your ancestors decided to do, said the thing. So they could keep an eye on it, I assume.
Masklin's face lit up. You know, when we used to live in the old hole, I used to sit out at nights and watch the moon. Perhaps in my blood, I really knew that up there...
No, what you were experiencing was probably primitive superstition.
Masklin deflated.
Oh, sorry. And now, please be quiet. The ship is feeling lost and wants to be told what to do. It has just woken up after 15,000 years.
I'm not very good at mornings myself, Masklin said. There's no sound on the moon, but this doesn't matter because there's no one to hear anything. But there is light. Fine moon dust billowed high across the ancient plains of the moon's dark crescent, expanding in boiling clouds that went high enough to catch the rays of the sun. They glittered. Down below, something was digging itself out.
We left it in a hole, said Masklin.
Lights rippled back and forth across all the surfaces of the thing.
Don't say that's why you always lived in holes, it said. Other gnomes don't live in holes.
No, that's true, said Masklin. I ought to stop thinking only about the... He suddenly went quiet. He stared out of the glass tank where a human was trying to interest him in marks on a blackboard.
You've got to stop it, he said. Right now, stop the ship. We've got it all wrong, thing. We can't go. It doesn't belong to just us. We can't take the ship.
The three gnomes lurking near the shuttle launching place watched the sky. As the sun neared the horizon, the moon sparkled like a Christmas decoration.
It must be caused by the ship, said Angelo. It must be, he beamed at the others.
That's it, then. It's on its way.
I never thought it would work, Gerda began. Angelo slapped Peon on the back and pointed.
See that, my lad? He said. That's the ship, that is. Ours.
Gerda rubbed his chin and nodded thoughtfully at Peon.
Our ship, he said. The one that brought gnomes here.
Yes, that's right, said Angelo, hardly hearing him.
And it'll take us all back.
That's what Masklin said, and...
All gnomes, said Gerda.
His voice was as flat and heavy as a sheet of lead. Sure, why not? I expect it'll soon work out how to drive it back to the quarry, and we can pick them all up.
What about Peon's people? Said Gerda.
Oh, they can come too, said Angelo expansively.
And the others?
What others?
Shrub said there were lots of other groups of gnomes.
Everywhere.
Angelo looked blank.
Oh, them. Well, I don't know about them, but we need the ship.
But if we take the ship away, what will they have if they need it? Masklin had just asked the same question. The thing said,
0100110101010101010101010100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100100
penetration, there might not be a ship for anyone, it said. I am sending 15,000 instructions per second. Masklin said nothing. That's a lot of instructions, the thing added.
By rights, the ship must belong to all the gnomes in the world, said Masklin.
01001100100100100. Oh, shut up, and tell me when the ship is going to get here. 4 minutes.
I can't hang around in here if it's coming that soon, said Masklin. How can I get out? This thing's got a lid on.
Do you want me to shut up first, or get you out and then shut up, said the thing.
Please!
Get ready to run, then, but first put your hands over your ears.
Lights on the thing made a brief star-shaped pattern. It started to wail. The sound went up and then went beyond Masklin's hearing. He could feel it, even with his hands over his ears. It seemed to be making unpleasant bubbles in his head. Then the walls exploded. One moment there was glass, and the next there were bits of glass, drifting out like a jigsaw puzzle, where every piece had suddenly decided it wanted some personal space. The lid slid down, almost hitting him.
Now pick me up and run, ordered the thing.
Humans around the room were turning to look in that slow, clumsy way humans had. Masklin grabbed the thing and took off across the polished surface.
Down, he said. We're high up. How do we get down?
He looked around desperately. There was some sort of machine at the other end of the table, covered with little dials and lights.
Wires, he said. There's always wires.
He dodged easily around a giant hand as it tried to grab him and haired along the table.
I'll have to throw you, he panted. I can't carry you down.
I'll be all right.
Masklin slid to a stop by the table edge and threw the thing down. There were wires running down towards the floor. He leapt for one and slid down it. Humans were lurching towards him from everywhere. He picked up the thing again, hugged it to his chest and darted forwards. There was a foot. He zigged. There were two more feet. He zagged. There were more feet and hands reaching down. Masklin was a blur, dodging and weaving. And then there was nothing but open floor. Somewhere an alarm sounded.
Head for the door, suggested the thing.
Masklin reached the door just as it opened. He saw a shoe, a foot, and more feet behind it. There wasn't any time to think. Masklin ran over the shoe, jumped down on the other side, and ran on. The problem wasn't evading capture. It would take a very alert human even to see a gnome running at full speed, let alone catch one, but simply avoiding being trodden on by accident. The corridor was filling with humans. Another alarm started to sound.
Why is all this happening? I can't be causing all this. There can't be all this trouble over just one gnome.
It's the ship. They have seen the ship.
A shoe almost awarded Masklin the prize for the most perfectly flattened gnome in Florida. Unlike most shoes, it had a name on it. It was a crucial street drifter with real rubber sole. The sock above it looked as though it could be a his-style odour-proof made of guaranteed 85% poly-put-the-kettle-on, the most expensive sock in the world. Masklin looked further up. Beyond the great sweep of blue trouser and the distant clouds of sweater was a beard. It was grandson Richard 39. Just when you thought there was no one watching over gnomes, the universe went and tried to prove you wrong. Masklin took a standing jump and landed on the trouser leg just as the foot moved. Masklin swung backwards and forwards, trying to pull himself up the rough cloth. There was a seam an inch away. He managed to grab it. The stitches gave a better handhold. Grandson Richard 39 was in a crush of people all heading the same way. Several other humans banged into him, almost jarring Masklin loose. Masklin reached a pocket, got a decent foothold, and climbed on. A bulky label helped him up to the belt. The sweater was much easier to climb. Masklin hauled himself up quickly. Grandson Richard had quite long hair, which also helped when it was time to climb up onto the shoulder. A door frame passed briefly overhead, and then the deep blue of the sky. "How long, thing?" Masklin hissed. Grandson Richard's ear was only a few inches away.
43 seconds.
The humans spilled out onto the wide concrete space in front of the building. They kept running into one another because they were all staring at the sky. "What's going on, thing?" Masklin whispered.
"The human in the middle of the group is the most important one here. It came to watch the shuttle launch. Now all the others are telling it that it's got to be the one to welcome the ship."
"That's a bit of a cheek. It's not their ship."
"Yes, but they think it's coming to talk to them."
"Why should they think that?"
"Because they think they're the most important creatures on the planet."
"Huh.
00101001100.
"You're talking to the ship again."
"Yes. 6 seconds.
"It's really coming."
"Yes."
Angelo looked around. "Gerda, come on!" Gerda leant against a tuft of grass and fought to get his breath back.
"It's no good," he wheezed. "What are you thinking of? We can't fight humans alone.
We've got Peon, and this is a pretty good axe."
"Oh, that's really going to scare them, a stone axe. If you had two axes, I expect they'd give in right away."
"You've got to try," Angelo said simply. "Come on, Peon. What are you watching, geese?" Peon was staring at the sky.
"There's a dot up there," said Gerda, squinting.
"It's probably a bird," said Angelo.
"Doesn't look like a bird."
"Then it's a plane."
"Doesn't look like a plane."
All three of them were staring upwards. What had been a dot was now a small dark circle.
"It's not moving, though,"
said Gerda.
"It's not moving sideways anyway," said Angelo.
What had been a small dark circle was a larger dark circle with just a suspicion of smoke or steam around its edges.
"It's the ship coming for us," exclaimed Gerda.
It was a lot bigger now, and yet, still a very long way off.
"If it could come for us just a little way away, I wouldn't mind," Gerda quavered. "I wouldn't mind walking a little way."
"Yes," said Angelo, beginning to look desperate. "It's not so much coming as...
"Dropping," said Gerda.
He looked at Angelo.
"Shall we run?"
he said. "It's got to be worth a try," said Angelo.
"Where shall we run to?"
"Let's just follow Peon, shall we? He started running a while ago." The thing dropping out of the sky was a disc. Just a top, connected to a bottom, with edges round the sides. It didn't make any noise, but it seemed to be impressing the humans no end.
"That's it,"
Masklin said.
"Yes,"
confirmed the thing.
"Oh."
The ship wasn't big. It needed a new word. There had to be a special word for something as big as that.
"I shall land it on the scrub," said the thing. "I don't want to frighten the humans."
A shadow fell across the three running gnomes.
"All the way to Floridia to be squashed under our own ship," moaned Angelo. "You never really believed in it, did you? Well, now you're going to believe in it really hard!"
The shadow deepened. They could see it racing across the ground ahead of them, grey around the edges, spreading into the darkness of night. Their own private night. "The others are still out there somewhere," said Masklin.
"Ah,"
said the thing.
"I forgot."
"You're not supposed to forget things like that."
"I've been very busy lately. I can't think of everything. Just nearly everything."
"Well, don't squash anyone."
"I shall stop it before it lands. Don't worry."
The humans were all talking at once. Some of them had started to run towards the falling ship. Some were running away from it. Masklin risked a glance at Grandson Richard's face. It was watching the ship with a strange, rapt expression. As Masklin stared, The big eyes swiveled slowly sideways. The head turned around. Grandson Richard stared down at the gnome on his shoulder. For the second time, the human saw him. And this time, there was nowhere to run. Masklin wrapped the thing on its lid.
"Can you slow my voice down?" he said quickly.
An amazed expression was forming on the human's face.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean so he can understand it."
"You want to communicate with a human?"
"Yes.
It could be very dangerous."
Masklin clenched his fists.
"Compared to what, thing? Compared to what? How much more dangerous than not communicating, thing? Tell him we're not trying to hurt any humans. Right now. Do it!"
He held the box right up to Grandson Richard's ear. The thing started to speak in the low, slow tones of human speech. It seemed to go on for a long time. The human's expression froze.
"What did you say?" said Masklin.
"I said, if he harms you in any way, I shall explode and blow his head off."
"You didn't."
"I did."
"But it's a dreadful thing to say. Anyway, you never told me you could explode."
"I can't, but it doesn't know that."
The ship slowed its fall and drifted down across the scrublands until it met its own shadow. Beside it, the tower where the shuttle had been launched looked like a pin alongside a very large black plate.
"You landed it on the ground! You said you wouldn't!" said Masklin.
"It's not on the ground. It is floating just above the ground."
Grandson Richard was looking at Masklin down the length of his nose. He looked puzzled.
"What makes it float?"
Masklin demanded. The thing told him.
"Auntie? Auntie who? Who's she?"
"Not auntie, auntie. Anti-gravity."